Monday morning you showed the fight. Good morning, NFL fans. Welcome to another playoff edition of Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. We have a full division weekend wrap-up episode here for you this week. I'm going to recap all of the games from Saturday and Sunday. We have an interview with Alex Reamer, a former podcaster here at footballnation.com. He's gone on to write and podcast on other sites. He joined us for about 10 to 15 minutes to discuss the Patriots and Colts game from Saturday night. But we're going to start off with the first game of the weekend, Saints and Seahawks. Second segment, we're going to go into Sunday's action with the 49ers beating the Panthers and the Broncos defeating their division rival, the Chargers. And then, as always, in the third and final segment, well, actually, not our final segment, but the third segment, we will have the fourth and long segment where we talk about next week, preview the championship games, and I talk a little bit about the teams that were eliminated this week as well. And then in the fourth segment, I will, last one, as we leave the show, I'll give you a couple of articles that I think you should check out on our website, footballnation.com. So let's get right to it. Busy weekend, of course. A lot of people consider this the best weekend in the NFL season. Personally, I like the championship weekend the best, but I can see why you might like division weekend more, because it's actually a whole weekend as opposed to just one day, Sunday, for championship week. But that's a discussion we can have later. But getting into the game, the first game, I'm talking about the Saints and Seahawks. You know, this was, I don't want to say it was a tale of two halves, because the Seahawks, at least their defense, really dominated this entire game. And even though the Saints were able to get 15 points on the board, that came in the fourth quarter. And not that the Seahawks were letting up, but it was more of the New Orleans offense improved as the game went on. And the Seahawks D was ferocious. I mean, top notch. I was watching this game, and I was trying to think of, when was the last time I saw such a dominant defense in the NFL? And I probably would have to go back to 2008 when the Steelers won the Super Bowl that season. And kind of like that team in Pittsburgh, the Seahawks are having their troubles on offense. And I think that's what everyone's going to concentrate on this week with their rival 49ers coming to town. Will the Seahawks offense be able to get it done in the championship game? Didn't really get it done in this one. I mean, Marshawn Lynch had a really good game rushing, 28 carries, 140 yards, and scored two touchdowns. But Russell Wilson and the rest of the offense was kind of inept. I mean, 9 of 18 for Wilson, 103 yards through the air, didn't throw any interceptions, but no touchdowns, took three sacks. It was kind of clear to me that Wilson was afraid to roll the dice, and he didn't want to try and make a big splash play and risk perhaps making a negative play, throwing an interception or something like that, which, you know what, if anybody in the NFL can do that, it's him, because he has this amazing defense, which I think, getting back to kind of where they stand in history, maybe it's premature to talk about, because if they don't win the Super Bowl, then they'll probably be forgotten. You know, that's just kind of the way it is in the history of the NFL. But since 2000, obviously the NFL has changed a lot with new rules and such, and the way offenses have just exploded. But that should make it even more impressive what the Seahawks defense has been able to do. Since 2000, I really think prior to this year, it was the Ravens in 2000, the 02 Buccaneers, and the 2008 Steelers were my top three defenses of the last, say, since 2000, 12, 13 years. You got to throw the Seahawks of this year into that category, the same category. I don't know if they're better than any of those three, but you kind of have to have now a top four. You know, of this century, the top four defenses are those teams, and those other three all won the Super Bowl. All didn't have great offenses. Seahawks really remind me of those teams. And everyone is going to criticize Russell Wilson and the offense this week for the Seahawks. Can they get it done? This and that, blah, blah, blah. Well, This is the Seahawks offense the way it's been all year. Nothing has changed. And their struggles in this game against New Orleans, I think it all the credit has to go to the Saints defense. They played tremendous. Think about how bad they were last year. The worst defense of all time. Talk about history in the NFL of defenses, where they stand. Last year's Saints was the worst statistical defense of all time. This one, this year for New Orleans was, I mean, it's not going to be a great defense, but they've, at time, have played great, and borderline, I'd say, top 10 defense for the whole season. And with the offense that they have, all they need to do is finish in the top half in defense and be a competitor, be a team that is a tough out for teams in the playoffs, even playing on the road, not in the Superdome. They were a tough out for this dominant Seahawks defense and great Seattle team. But in this game, and I don't want to say it was a tale of two halves, but the first half was completely dominated by the Seahawks. It felt that way, but in a way it wasn't. I think the both teams really missed out on opportunities. And the Saints missed out on opportunities to make a couple field goals in this game. In the first quarter, they didn't have the win, but in the second quarter they did, and they still couldn't get any points on the board. And Seattle did a good job of dominating on defense, like I've been saying. But the offense failed to really take a hold of the game. Very early on, I mean, it could have been, at halftime, this could have been 20 to nothing, at the very least, 20 to nothing. And then the game would have been over. But instead, on the last drive at the end of the first half, the Seahawks have to settle for a third field goal. And it was a short one, 26 yards. So inside the 10-yard line, they couldn't score. And it was only 16-0. And that's only a two-possession game. 16 doesn't sound like a big difference between 16 and 20, but it was, because it was only a two-possession game. The Saints scored next and got the two-point conversion. So all of a sudden, at the beginning of the fourth quarter, even though the Seahawks were outplaying the Saints, it was only 16-8 and one touchdown and a two-point conversion away from a tie. And even though I'm sure everyone would agree that the Seahawks were dominating the game, in the yardage category, they weren't. And if you look at the final yardage, the Saints had over 400 yards of offense. That would not be my guess. I would not guess that the Saints had that many yards the way that the Seahawks played in the first half and really throughout the whole game on defense. That's quite surprising. But Drew Brees, 24 of 43 passing the ball, 309 yards through the air and a touchdown. I mean, a majority of those came, I don't want to say in garbage time because they were trying to come back, but a majority of those came in the fourth quarter, in the second half. He only had 34 passing yards in the entire first half. So 309 in the game, quite a lot of them coming in the second half. The Saints weren't able to get much of a running game going, and I think that's what they were relying on. They didn't want Drew Brees to have to throw the ball all over the yard, outside, in the rain. And that's what it turned out to be. And Brees probably threw better than what he thought or better than what the Saints expected. But the New Orleans actually wanted to establish a running game and really weren't able to. They had a decent average for as a team, 108 yards on 26 carries for an average of 4.2. Not a bad average. But the Seahawks, on the other hand, 174 yards rushing, averaging 5 yards a carry, 2 touchdowns on the ground as well. So a little bit different disparity there. And you know what? Even though the entire year we talk about passing offenses, right? Well, the Seahawks and everyone really that won, or most teams, 3 of the 4 teams that won in the division weekend ran the ball more than they passed. And that, I think, is an amazing stat right there with what most people would consider to be a passing league. Now, I think everybody would, passing league. And I'm not going to argue it's not a passing league, but the running game obviously still belongs in the NFL and particularly important in bad weather and cold games and in the playoffs. Teams that can run the ball and play defense win games. And that's what Seattle did. And that I will get to my prediction later, but I think Seattle at home will be able to do that again next week. I'm not worried at all about the Seahawk offense. I mean, it's a concern, but that's the way they've played all year. I'm not going to jump off the bandwagon all of a sudden because they play below average against the Saints. The Saints played excellent on defense. It wasn't like this is out of the ordinary. This is the way Russell Wilson has been all year. He's not a great statistical quarterback. He's more of a game manager. And we all hate that phrase, game manager. But I use it as a compliment more than a diss. Russell Wilson is a great quarterback, a great game manager, but he's not going to light it up in the stat, in the box score. And that's fine. It's fine with him as long as the Seahawks win. So I do want to go over quickly the end of this game, which is a little bit unusual. The Saints scored with 26 seconds left to bring the score to 23-15 and then went for an onside kick. They were 2-for-2 so far this year on onside kicks, and they converted another one with a different kicker. So 3-for-3 on the year, the Saints finish in onside kicks. And Marcus Colston recovered the onside kick, and then two plays later, Colston catches a long pass from Drew Brees, and he was, I think, around the 35-40-yard line of Seattle when he made the catch, definitely within position where Drew Brees can throw a ball into the end zone for a last-minute Hail Mary. But rather than stepping out of the bounds with about 3 or 4 seconds left, Colston decides to try and lateral the ball, clearly throws it forward by 3 or 4 yards. Penalty, play is over, and because the clock was running, it's a 10-second runoff. The Saints have no timeouts left, and with only 3 or 4 seconds left, the game's over with a 10-second runout. That's how the game ended. Pretty incredible and ridiculous ending. It was incredible that the Saints were able to make this a 7-point game and then recover a onside kick to bring it down to the final seconds. And I just, you know, if it's funny because you criticize Colston for that move. I mean, it seemed really dumb, but if that works, he would have been a genius. It's just, I don't know why he tried to lateral it forward. I mean, obviously that's not going to work. And it was clearly for him. I mean, there was no controversy. Clearly forward by 3 or 4 yards. Don't know who he was even throwing to. I mean, yeah, if he could have gotten it to a receiver on the other side of the field, perhaps he scores, but me personally, and if I was a Saints fan, I would have taken my chances with one more heave to the end zone with Drew Brees and guys that play basketball like Jimmy Graham, even against a really tough Seahawks secondary. That's what I would rather put my money on than a ridiculous lateral that kind of lasts second play like that. I'd rather take my chances with the Hail Mary. So the 8 o'clock game on Saturday was between the Indianapolis Colts and the New England Patriots, with the Patriots pulling away in the game 43-22. At one point it was 29-22, but the Patriots really making a statement, winning by 21 points. We now bring in Alex Reamer in an interview with him to recap the game and the Patriots' victory. This is now a part of our show where we welcome in Alex Reamer, sports writer for Bostino.com and Patriots expert. Alex, how you doing today?
Patriots expert. I don't know about that, but I'll try. Dave, how are you? Always good to come on, man.
Well, thanks for coming on very much. We're going to talk Patriots. You know, I figure you're a Patriots expert, at least Patriots fan, Alex.
Patriots observer, Dad. Patriots observer, Dave. Come on.
Okay.
Got to keep the biases at the door.
Right. Okay. Well, what did you observe last night watching the Patriots defeat the Colts on Saturday with a heavy run game there, Alex?
Yes, Patriots, 235 rushing yards, Dave, to only 198 passing yards and, 46 rushing attempts, 25 passing attempts. And this is really the continuation of a trend that began last month in Baltimore. I saw this stat tweeted out on Twitter from Tommy Curran, a Patriots beat writer for Comcast Sportsnet New England. In the past 3 games, so Baltimore, Buffalo, then obviously Saturday night, Brady has attempted 75 passes. He's never had a 3-game stretch with fewer attempts. So
wow.
The Patriots are obviously, right, that's a great stat, and it tells you that this Patriot offense, look, Bill Belichick knows this team could be relatively easy to defend without much of a running game because you have Julian Edelman as your number one target, Danny Amendola, Austin Collier, and the Patriots receiving core last night looked like something you'd see in the mid-50s. I mean, so they need to run the ball to be successful, and I never thought I would say that with a Tom Brady-led offense, but that appears to be the case this year. And they frankly just beat up the Colts last night, Dave. The Colts had the 26th ranked defense against the run this season. Belichick and Josh McDaniels knew that. And I think applied a perfect game plan. They really bullied the Colts to the tune of, again, 234 yards on the ground.
Well, LeGarrette Blount, you bring up some stats. Here's one for Blount. 24 carries, 166 yards just for him, 4 touchdowns. Yeah. Second most all-time in playoff history.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's unbelievable, Dave. And what's most unbelievable to me about Blount is the fact that the Patriots acquired him in late August for Jeff Demps, who's essentially a sprinter who doesn't want to play football. I mean, he wasn't on the Patriots, didn't play with the Bucs this year. I mean, that's highway robbery. And Aqib Talib as well, if you want to go back last year, came over from the Bucs for a middle-round draft pick. So Bill Belichick's awfully upset that Greg Schiano's out in Tampa Bay, I'll tell you that. His buddy over there certainly did him a lot of favors the past 2 years. But Blount's been terrific for the Patriots down the stretch, there's no doubt about it. And again, Dave, just the physicality of it is such a change for this offense, especially what we've seen recently. And that offensive line for the Patriots, give them a lot of credit too. Blount had that 70-plus yard touchdown run in the second half, and a lot of credit for that goes to Hooman, the tight end, Michael Hoo-Hoo-Mananui, and Logan Mankins as well had a great block on that too. So again, the Patriots really just bullied the Colts up front. They were the far more physical team. That's something that a lot of people have been dying for them to do in the postseason the past couple years. And they really got back to it on Saturday night and punished the Colts to, as you mentioned, 4 touchdowns for Blount, 2 for Stephen Ridley as well, for 6 rushing TDs in total.
One of my concerns for the Patriots going into the playoffs was how they would play in the red zone. And without Rob Gronkowski, the big tight end red zone target for Tom Brady, again, with him not throwing a lot, it wasn't as big of an issue, but 5 for 6 in the red zone scoring touchdowns Saturday too.
Right, and that's one of my big concerns too, Dave. But what they do in the red zone, they handed it off to the big back, LeGarrette Blount, and he was able to get into the end zone 4 times, and Stephen Ridley got in a couple times as well. So, look, previously with Rob Gronkowski, he was the Patriots' number one weapon in the red zone. But without him, you have to reconfigure things a little bit. A guy like Edelman, smaller receivers like that, they can get jammed on the line a little bit, especially in playoff football, which, as we've seen the past 2 weekends, the officials let the defensive players actually play defense a little bit. They don't throw the flag whenever a quarterback tries to throw the ball down the field.
So refreshing, right?
It is refreshing. It's like real football, right? Right. Not just arena ball crap. So, so the Patriots were the far more physical team on Saturday, and that was their point of attack in the red zone. Run the football, and it worked beautifully. And the other thing with Brady as well, Dave, now that you have the run game going, you can go to the play action.
Oh, yeah,
which
great
he
point.
Did a couple of times on the long pass to Danny Amendola in the second half. The Colts defenders bit on the play action. Amendola was wide open down the field. So it opens up a lot of things for this Patriot offense, and it's really something they have to do because of the depleted weapons they have at receiver and tight end.
Looking ahead just briefly, do you think they'll be able to establish this kind of running game against the Broncos next week on the road?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, Dave. I mean, the Broncos' defensive line really dominated the Chargers' offensive line in the game on Sunday, but I think that's because San Diego was battling a lot of injuries. I think they'll try, obviously, and I think they should have some decent success with it. I don't know how I feel about that Broncos team, Dave. I wasn't that impressed with them with their victory over San Diego. They really let the Chargers hang around. A lot of missed opportunities. They had the interception in the red zone at the end of the first half. Ball bounced off Welker into the defender's hands. The missed field goal by Prater. Bad special teams. They didn't recover the onside kick. Fourth and long, Keenan Allen was wide open. Broncos again, like against Baltimore last year, right? That fourth and long, one thing you have to do is cover the deep ball. The secondary couldn't do it. So it should be a great game next week. The Broncos should be favored in it, obviously. But I think the Patriots can definitely put up a fight. And yeah, I think they can establish the run and play their game, no doubt about it.
Flipping over the defense and going back to Saturday night's game, another key player I thought for the Patriots defense was another former Tampa Bay Buck with Aqib Talib, who's been a key guy all season for them and doing an excellent job. Even though T.Y. Hilton still had 4 catches for 103 yards, it seemed like he was a big key in slowing down Hilton and the Colts offense.
Yeah, Hilton wasn't really even close to what he was last week against Kansas City. He did have over 100 yards receiving at the end of the day, but only two catches for 17 yards in the first half, Dave. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Andrew Luck couldn't get him going early, and the Patriots did a lot of things. They played man-to-man to Le'Veon Hilton, which, heading into the game, I didn't know if that was a great matchup for Tlaib, because Tlaib struggled against Steve Smith earlier in the season in that game against Carolina, and Hilton's kind of similar to Smith, not quite as physical as him, but he's a smaller, quicker guy. Tlaib is obviously a bigger cornerback, usually does better against taller, more taller wide receivers, but, you know, that wound up being a really good matchup for the Patriots, and they also had some zone on Hilton as well, which worked to varying degrees of success. So, yeah, hey, look, one thing about Bill Belichick coach teams is they don't let the opposition beat them with their best, meaning Belichick will take out your best weapon. And with the Colts offensively, it's T.Y. Hilton. Outside of him, without Reggie Wayne, that receiving core is made up of average players. And that's what the Patriots did. They took Hilton out of the game. Mm-hmm. And Andrew Luck still had some success. I mean, he found Brazil for a couple of touchdowns.
Right.
Patriots secondary still banged up a little bit. That defense, you know, without Mayo, Wilfork certainly has a lot of holes in it. And Luck exploited them some. But the Patriots will not let you beat them with your best player. You'll have to beat them with your secondary options. They took out Hilton, and the Colts simply didn't have enough. And Luck made some poor decisions as well. He threw four interceptions,
and
he was able to come back from that against Kansas City, but not against the Patriots. To turn the ball over that many times against the Patriots, especially at Gillette Stadium, you're going to pay for it.
Yeah, you can't turn the ball over, what, seven times in back-to-back weeks and win both games.
Right.
Not going to happen.
No doubt about it. Yep, the Patriots always try to win the turnover battles. And again, they let their opponents beat themselves. And the Colts, I never really thought we were in that game. I mean, like, through the interception to Dennard on the first drive, Patriots come back in the red zone, as we mentioned, pounding it in with Blunt. I mean, they were up by two possessions early on in that first quarter, and you just knew it was over then and there, and it really was. It wasn't really much of a ball game.
Yeah, even when it was a seven-point game in the third quarter, it didn't seem like the Colts were going to have what it took to come back and win.
Because the Patriots were beating them up
at
the lines. They won the battle in the trenches.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know things are going well when one of your biggest concerns is the health of your punter. What is the status of Ryan Allen? He got beat up a little bit. I think it happened on the play, the safety play.
Yep.
Is he going to be all right to punt in Denver next week?
By the way, what's up with Dan Dierdorf on that? I mean, what's wrong with him? Why wasn't the producer in his ear telling him that? I mean, you do what Allen did. I mean, I don't think Allen meant to get it out of the end zone. I think he did that inadvertently. But
right,
still,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, you don't give them the ball on the two-yard line. You take the safety there. But anyway.
I'm glad you brought that up, because it wasn't one of Dan's best moments, especially in the end of his last game.
No, but it is appropriate that Dan Dierdorf, a Hall of Fame offensive lineman, goes out calling a game in which the Patriots' offensive line really dominated.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Victory. So that actually fits in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It comes full circle for him. No, as far as Ryan Allen goes, I'm not sure about his status. I'll tell you that Steven Gostkowski punting the ball four times and doing it really well is just really a symbol for what's gone on this season with the Patriots, losing a ton of guys in every spot and plugging other guys in. I mean, the Patriot way, Dave, isn't about superior morality or anything like that. It's really about just having a superior football operation to the other 31 clubs and having a deeper club than the other 31 teams. And I think you see that in a place kicker in Steven Gostkowski, who can go on, do a good job punting. You had Tom Brady holding kicks as well.
Yeah, yeah.
My question is, I wonder why the Patriots' backup quarterback couldn't do that. I mean, I know Ryan Mallett can't really throw the ball that well, but I guess he can't hold it either. Hey, it's just another embodiment of another symbol, I should say, about what the Patriots have been about all season long. Punter goes down, place kicker Gostkowski fills in for him and does a really nice job. They don't miss a beat.
Do you have a prediction for next week's AFC Championship?
Oh, putting me on the spot. Again, as I said, Broncos are the number one seed. They should be favored in the game. Not by much, but they'll be favored, and that's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what, Dave? I'll go Patriots in this one, because you look at Tom Brady's postseason track record. He went 10-0, his first career 10 playoff games, then 8-7 in his last 15. And the numbers in the last 15 are rather inconsistent, but you saw the running attack last week. You saw the improved defense as well. This Patriots team doesn't need Brady to be great to win. And, you know, I think Peyton Manning, the lackluster postseason track record, I think the hoodie with Belichick is back a little bit this year. I think he'll add in a few wrinkles to confuse Manning, as did Andrew Luck last Saturday. Peyton Manning versus Tom Brady in the playoffs.
It's a classic.
It's a classic, and you got to go Brady. You do. I go Patriots in this one. And one thing I will say, Dave, quickly, a bit of a tangent. A lot of people around here talk about, oh, Patriots in the AFC title game. Everything is gravy now. With all the injuries they've gone through, no Gronkowski, no Wilfork, no Mayo. Aaron Hernandez allegedly, you know, is killing people and in prison. Gotta use allegedly. That's key.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people say, with all the Patriots have gone through, all the adversity they faced, it's all gravy. I say, no way, because the Belichick-Brady window, and Charles Barkley, I think, articulated this better than anyone in the postgame on Saturday night. Not sure if you saw his interview, but look, the Patriots are there every year, and you can't take it for granted. You have to appreciate it. You don't know how much longer these opportunities will continue to arise. I mean, you look, only four coaches have won Super Bowls north the age of 60. Belichick is 61. Only one quarterback, John Elway, has won a Super Bowl north of the age of 37. Brady's 36. The championship window is closing here, Dave.
It is.
So you have to relish these opportunities. It's not gravy. If you're the Patriots, if you don't go in and win that game, season's not a failure, obviously, but it would be a disappointment. You're in this spot, and you can't take it for granted that you're going to be in this spot next year.
I think for the casual fan, you know, outside of New England, it's just kind of like the same old story. What is this, their eighth championship game in 12 years? Something like that?
Manning's had 8-1 and duns in his career, and Brady's been to the AFC title game 8 times.
Yeah, so that's incredible. Great. Incredible.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But like I said, though, Dave, again, just you look at this Belichick-Brady window, and they win 3 and 4 years to start off their run. Haven't won in a decade, though. To me, it would be great to see them get one more, and you don't know how many more times these opportunities will arise.
Alex Reamer, sports writer for the Bostonian.com. Thanks, Alex, for coming on the show.
Dave, always a pleasure, my friend. We'll do it again soon.
Once again, I want to thank Alex for coming on the show. I believe that's either his second or third time on the show, but he's one of our regular guests, and it's always great having him on. So again, thanks, Alex, for coming on the show. We're going to take a break now. That was all from Saturday, but when we come back, we'll go over the two games from Sunday.
I know when I've had enough. When I think your love is rough, the good's gone. The good's gone. The good's gone.
Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. Your host, Dave Holcomb. Don't forget, you can tweet at me, DM HOLCOMB. You can also email me if you don't have a Twitter, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. And you can find us on Facebook as well, Dave's Football News. I post all of my articles and work and other top stories that I like from footballnation.com there as well. Real quick before we go into Sunday's games, I forgot to bring up before that we have a couple of articles from the action from Saturday. Seahawks swamp Saints 23-15, five things we learned. That's by Rob Allenby. I hope I'm saying your last name right, Rob. He had several of the same points that I talked about. So just once again, if you want to read more about what people think about the ferocious Seahawks defense and you know the fact that the Seahawks need a little bit more on offense, need more work on offense, go check out that article. And there's another one that is related to what we'll be getting into later on in the show, but it's by Gareth Brown. New Orleans Saints, Robinson and defense give hope for the future. He's referring to the running back for the Saints, the guy that ran behind Mark Ingram. That is Curly Robinson, who actually led the team in carries and yardage in the game against the Seahawks. So, and once again, the defense played very well. We'll get into it later, but maybe a promising future for New Orleans. Okay, on Sunday, we had the 49ers, one of the many wild card teams that were left, actually. We had two wild card teams in action on Sunday. As the 49ers went to Carolina to visit the Panthers, it was a brawl. Right? I mean, it was a boxing match. So many penalties in this game. A lot of unsportsmanlike conducts, personal fouls. They're just jawing. And it wasn't like, it's not like these two are rivals. And now I can really say, imagine what next week's going to be with San Francisco and Seattle going at it. But this is the kind of games you get with hard-hitting teams. And you know what? Personally, I love it. You know, have a little fight in you. Not that you know, the Patriots and the Broncos and the Chargers don't have fight in them. I mean, we talked with Alex about how physically dominating the Patriots were for the first time in a while. But this, to me, is what playoff football is all about, what the Panthers and 49ers game was. And although that was probably supposed to be the closest game, the 49ers really, I don't want to say dominated. I'm surprised they won by 13 points. And you can really point to a couple of instances where if it goes the other way, then maybe the result changes. I'm talking specifically at the end of the first half where the 49ers and Colin Kaepernick finds Vernon Davis in the corner of the end zone for a one-yard touchdown pass. I believe that was the right call. Originally, it was ruled an incomplete pass because Vernon Davis did not drag his foot. I believe he did. He got his one foot down and he dragged the other one, had a clear possession of the ball, held onto it to the ground, touchdown. The one controversy, though, was there were 12 men in the huddle for the 49ers before that play started. And even though the 12th man left before the game, before that play began, that's still a penalty. Too many men in the huddle is a penalty no matter when it is, when you have too many men in the huddle. So that play should have been nullified, really, and the 49ers should have ran that play from 5 yards back. Instead of from the one, it would have been from the six. Very different game if it goes into halftime 10-9 Carolina rather than 13-10 San Francisco. And to start the third quarter, Carolina struggles on offense. I believe it was a three and out, punted away, and then the 49ers went down and scored, and that was really where they took control of the game, and they led from the rest of the way, and Carolina didn't score again. But one thing that I want to talk about for Carolina, they let the intensity of this game and the intensity of the playoffs get to them. I mean, both teams came with intensity, and I found it's so interesting what the two head coaches told Pam Oliver at halftime, what their adjustments were going to be. Ron Rivera for Carolina said, "We have to calm down. We have to slow the game down, get control of our emotions." Jim Harbaugh, exact opposite. "We got to rev up the intensity." Man, rev up the intensity? This game was already intense. Well, that's how intense Jim Harbaugh is. I think that spoke to the playoff experience that this 49er team now has. Third year now with Jim Harbaugh. Went to the Super Bowl last year. It's the third year in a row now that they're in the championship game. They've won 5 playoff games in the last 3 years. They are a really experienced team. Carolina hasn't been to the playoffs since 2008. Cam Newton in his third year, never been to the playoffs. Ron Rivera never coached a playoff team. And you could see that. They let the intensity of the game get to them. And you want to match the 49ers' intensity, obviously. But when you're getting personal fouls that give the 49ers first downs, especially at the end of the game, where if you have any hope at all, being down by 13, you need the ball back, you need a stop, and you give them a first down because you get called for a personal foul, that's an example to me where you're letting the playoffs, the big moment, get to you. And I think that is what the Carolina players mostly did. I think Cam Newton played well. I mean, you can look at his box score and you see that he threw 2 interceptions. Those were costly for his team, and he's got to cut down on that in a big game like a playoff game, and he'll be able to do that in the future. I have confidence in him. The other thing I think for Carolina where you can point to and why they lost was when they got the ball inside the 5-yard line, it seemed like they couldn't put it in the end zone. And you can kind of say the same thing for San Francisco, although not inside the 5. The one time they did get it inside the 5, or a couple times they did, they scored. Colin Kaepernick doing his Superman, or Cam Newton's Superman on one occasion, and then the other one was the 1-yard touchdown pass that you could argue shouldn't have counted. But for Carolina, they didn't get it done. They didn't get the ball in the end zone. They got stopped on 4th and goal. You have a running quarterback. You try to run a quarterback sneak on 4th and 1 from the 1-yard line, 4th and goal from the 1, and you don't score. Even though you got the ball back and you scored with great field position after the punt, that's a scenario where you have to score. And both these teams really have fallen victim to that in the regular season and did again on Sunday, where they're settling for field goals or can't convert fourth and shorts and get the ball into the end zone. And if you want to talk about a struggling offense, we talked about the Seahawks offense struggling. Look, the San Francisco offense isn't struggling. I wouldn't use that word. But field goals isn't going to get it done in Seattle. Even against another team that loves to play defense and doesn't score a bunch of points, three Phil Dawson field goals isn't really going to get it done. Especially how bad Colin Kaepernick and the San Francisco 49ers have played in Seattle the last 2 years. They need to score touchdowns. Same with Seattle, though. They need touchdowns. They settle for field goals against the Saints, too. You want to win a championship, especially if you're going to win a Super Bowl against the high-flying Broncos or Patriots, you need touchdowns. The team, I mean, obviously, this is a very obvious statement, but the team that scores more touchdowns is going to win. I think whoever gets it in maybe once, whoever finds the end zone once in the NFC Championship might end up being the winner. That might be the difference. Still, I concentrated this segment on why Carolina lost. San Francisco was still pretty impressive in this game. The defense shut down Carolina in the second half. I mean, didn't allow any points. The San Francisco offense moved the ball. I think their one downfall, again, was just the fact that they didn't get it into the end zone enough, settling for field goals. But they're moving the ball well, and they have to have a lot of confidence going in against their rival next week, even though they haven't played well in Seattle. I think with their winning streak they're on right now and winning the last two road games against tough opponents, Carolina and Green Bay, 49ers got to have a lot of confidence going into Seattle. And the final game on Sunday, the Chargers and Broncos. You know, this was the most lopsided line going into the game. I'm talking, favorite line with the Broncos favored by the biggest margin this weekend. And this ended up being the closest final score, with the Broncos only winning by 7, 24-17, so the Chargers covered the spread. It was at 1.17-0. Yeah, a lot of people, again, I'm concentrating on what I believe will be storylines this week. I think a lot of people will focus on the fact the Broncos failed to really close out this game, and that was one of the points that Alex Reamer had. They let another fourth down play, long passing play, kind of like the Ravens play last year happened. But, you know, at home, the Broncos got it done. And it was a lackluster performance. I think that was kind of one of the key, common themes of this weekend as well. You could argue that Seattle had a lackluster performance, especially on offense. You could say the same for San Francisco's offense, even though, again, their defense played well. New England, I think, clearly the better team on the field against Indianapolis. But Denver, the word struggle is overused, but they didn't blow San Diego out of the building, even though they outgained them by 100 yards. I mean, they only had 363 yards on offense. We're used to a lot more from the Broncos. And it, you know, even though they were up 17, it just never felt like they were in complete control, and then it almost got away from them. And even at the end, it was like you thought that the Chargers were put away, but they came back and were fighting, even down 24-7 in the middle of the fourth quarter, and made it a game. The Broncos, again, were the only team that threw the ball more than they ran that won this weekend, and they almost had complete balance, with 36 pass attempts, 34 rushing attempts. No Sean Moreno, 23 carries, 82 yards. You need more yards out of him. You need a higher average against the Patriots next week. Monte Ball ran well, 52 yards on 10 carries, so that's a good average. But overall, if the Patriots come out and have that kind of running game against the Broncos and Denver can't counter with a rushing attack, Denver might struggle. They really might. I don't know. It's going to be a really intriguing game. But I was impressed with what San Diego was able to do in staying in this game. Keenan Allen had a great one. 6 catches, 142 yards. He had 2 touchdowns in the second half. Actually, in the fourth quarter, 2 touchdowns to bring the Chargers back. Phillip Rivers played very well. And we will get more into what I think about the Chargers for next year. But the Broncos, I think this upcoming game against the Patriots, you know, Alex Reamer talked about how the window's closing for New England. What about Denver? I mean, Peyton Manning is older than Tom Brady. And he had, I mean, I know he's played very well since coming off the neck surgeries. But at 37 years old, he's going to be 38 next year. Manning doesn't have that many years in him. So both Manning and Brady, this could be the last time, we see him play in the playoffs. As long as both of them come back and play next year, which I anticipate both of them doing, we will see them in the regular season because of the way the schedule works, all the first place teams play each other. So we will see this matchup again, as long as they're both healthy and playing. This, you know, I didn't want to overblow it in the regular season when we talked about the Manning and Brady matchup, but I don't think you can overblow this one. This is going to be marking the end of an era, and one of these quarterbacks gets to go play in the Super Bowl one more time. It very well could be that quarterback's last time in the Super Bowl, and the other one may not get another shot at this. So this is a very, very important game coming up for both teams. So my point that I agree with Alex that the Patriots' window is closing, but I think the Patriots' window is going to stay open a little longer than the Broncos' window. So both franchises are itching to get to the Super Bowl and win one because it may be a while until they're back in this position. We're going to take another break. We're going to come back with our fourth and long segment. People try to put us to death. Talking about my generation. Just because we get around. Talking about my generation. Things they do look awful. Talking about my generation. I hope I die before I get old. It was funny seeing The Who live play that song, because when I saw The Who in 2006, they were already old. And not only were they singing a song where they were hoping to die before they got old, they were still on tour in their 60s. But, I love The Who. Fantastic group. This is now our fourth and long segment. We're going to talk about the championship games coming up first. So my statement opening up here, both road teams will get a win next week. I think a lot of people would not be surprised if San Francisco and New England pull off the upsets. I'm assuming that both number one seeds, Denver and Seattle, will be favored. I think especially at home, everyone's expecting that. I'm not going to go with that statement, though. I'm going to disagree and punt that away. I mean, if anybody has been following the show since the preseason and follows my work as well, my articles, I predicted a Seattle-Denver Super Bowl in the preseason. I can't believe it's still possible. I can't believe it. I'm so excited that my prediction might actually come true. And for those of you who have followed me for several years will know that, you know, I get a lot of things wrong. We all do. I mean, that's why predictions are fun. But for once, and I'm not trying to brag here, for once I could actually get a Super Bowl prediction from the preseason, from August, correct. I'm really quite excited at the possibility. But at the same time, I would not be surprised at all if San Francisco or New England win. I stayed with Denver and Seattle when I did my playoff picks at the beginning of this month, beginning of the playoffs. I stuck with both number one seeds and with my gut from August. So how can I change now, right? I can't switch the week before when I could get my Super Bowl prediction from the preseason right. I can't switch. So I got to stay with Seattle and Denver. They're both going to win, and they're both going to make me look like a genius. I will say this. The team that I would not be surprised, well, I already said I wouldn't be surprised if either one loses. the team that I would be more expected to lose would be Denver. I think New England has a really good shot of going into Denver and winning. They run the ball like they did against Indianapolis. Tom Brady plays like he can. And I'm sorry to say it, Peyton Manning has the record of not playing very well against Tom Brady and not playing very well in the playoffs. He has a career 10-11 record now with the win on Sunday. In the 10-11 career playoff record. Tom Brady much better in the playoffs than that. I'm expecting... This is so hard because of my preseason prediction. But and you can see that I'm struggling here. I'm picking Denver, but not at all would I be surprised if New England wins. It's really a toss-up to me. I think if I didn't have my preseason prediction, I probably would be leaning New England. How about I put it that way? But I'm not going to jump ship. My final prediction is Denver. Going with my heart, but I have a feeling my heart's going to be broken next week. In the NFC, I think Seattle at home will get it done. Again, I won't be surprised if San Francisco wins. They are a very tough team. They've proved they can win on the road. They won on the road last year in the championship game. But I think Seattle, I think it's their year. I think they're going to win the whole thing. That defense is ferocious. And Russell Wilson, yeah, he doesn't go for the big plays, but he doesn't make any big mistakes. He's a great game manager, and I don't mean that as a diss. I mean it as the greatest compliment ever. Tom Brady was a game manager on Saturday. Anybody giving Tom Brady flack for being a game manager? For not throwing any touchdown passes, but having his team rush for six? No. So why give flack to Russell Wilson? My next statement, going to compare Jim Harbaugh to his brother John, who I seem to always mix up their names. But anyway, Jim Harbaugh and the 49ers are making their third straight NFC championship appearance. That's the first time an NFC team is making three straight appearances in the championship game since the Eagles did it back in 01, 02, 03, and 04. They actually had four straight appearances. Didn't win until the last one. My statement, Jim Harbaugh's three straight NFC championship appearances is more impressive than his brother's mark of winning a playoff game in his first five seasons as head coach of the Baltimore Ravens. This is a tough one and kind of interesting debate. I mean, obviously, they're both impressive. John Harbaugh with the Ravens has gone 10-4 in his first 6 years in the playoffs. Really, his first 5 years. He missed the playoffs this year in his sixth year. In Jim's first three seasons, he's gone 5-2 and has a shot to go all the way to 7-2 if they end up winning the Super Bowl. I'm going to go with Jim. I think making the championship game 3 years in a row, that does not happen very often. It's the first time the 49ers have made the championship game 3 years in a row since the early 90s, so the franchise has done it before. But the way Jim has been able to bring back the 49ers and the promise to that proud franchise, I'm going to give him the nod. I still think John Harbaugh coming in with a rookie quarterback in Joe Flacco and winning a playoff game every single year in the first 5 years that those two are together, extremely impressive, and then capping it off with a Super Bowl run last year. But I'm going to give the slight nod to Jim. Obviously, the Super Bowl with John, I mean, makes the overall work more impressive for John. But if you're just comparing, would I rather have three straight appearances in the NFC Championship game or five straight years with a playoff win, I would take the three championship appearances. By the way, the last time an AFC team made the championship game 3 years in a row, which New England is doing this year as well, along with San Francisco, it's not the Patriots in the early 2000s. The Buffalo Bills in the early 90s, they also made it four times in a row. Didn't win any of the Super Bowls. So, and that's kind of funny because New England hasn't won a Super Bowl in the last 3 years, and neither has San Francisco. And we'll see if either one of them wins it this year. But I guess for teams making consecutive championship game appearances, at least since 1990, until now, don't have a great track record in the Super Bowl. Kind of funny. All right, for our last statement in the fourth and long segment, I'm going to go to those teams that were eliminated this past weekend in division weekend. This year, Seattle and Denver, both number one seeds, both hosting the championship games next weekend. They were eliminated in division rounds last year. So looking at the teams that were eliminated this past year, my statement, Carolina, of those four teams, is the one most likely to come back and be dominant next year and maybe not host, but be in the championship game next year. I'm going to punt that one away. I like the direction the Panthers are going. I do. I think they're in a tough division, though. The Saints are going to be back. Ooh, they're another team that you could argue eliminated this past weekend and could be in the championship game next year. I think Tampa Bay and Atlanta will both be better. So Carolina, it's going to be tough for them to go on the kind of run they did this year. I'm going to go with the San Diego Chargers as the team most likely to get to the championship game next year. I liked the way they ended the season. They played really well on the road against Cincinnati, obviously winning that game. They played very well in Denver twice, winning one of the games. They have Mike McCoy, a different head coach. They're probably going to lose Ken Wisenhunt, but Phillip Rivers has resurged his career. He's back on track and being a Super Bowl candidate quarterback, an MVP-type guy. They have Ryan Matthews at running back, who's healthy all this year. They have other weapons at running back in Ronnie Brown and Danny Woodhead. They have a key wide receiver rookie that's going to get even better next year in Keenan Allen. They have other weapons they can use. Antonio Gates is getting a little older, but maybe they have his replacement in Ladarius Green. And you know what? That Charger defense played really well, a lot better than most people give them credit for. They held the Broncos to 24 points in Denver twice. John Pagano had that defense playing really well, really throughout the season and in the playoffs. I know that the history isn't on the side of the Chargers. They always seem to be next year's team. I think next year, I'm not predicting them to win the Super Bowl. I just think right now, the way I feel, the way they played this past weekend, of the four teams eliminated, they're the team that could come back and be really good next year. They'll be in a tough division. Talk about tough divisions. I said the NFC South will be tough. AFC West, arguably the best division in the league. I know the NFC West has had that title for this year and really last year, and rightfully so. But three teams from the AFC West made the playoffs. Three teams from the NFC West won 10 games. I get it. But AFC West, I think the Broncos take a step back next year. I don't think Peyton Manning is going to repeat as 5,500-yard and 55-touchdown guy MVP type. He'll still be good, but I think the Broncos take a step back. Maybe their defense is a little bit slower. Don't really know what we're going to get out of the Chiefs. Maybe the Chargers take a step up, win that division, and get to the championship game. You know, obviously really early to be making predictions, but that would be what I would be predicting as of right now. I have the right to change it later. All right, here's one more from The Who, and then we're going to come back and wrap up today's show. And we're back here on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle, your host, Dave Holcomb. Don't forget, I want to hear what you think about the show. Tweet at me, DM, HOLCOMB. You can also email me, HolcombMDavid@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook, Dave's Football News. I want to thank Alex one more time for coming on the show. Here's a couple articles to check out this week. One from Austin Perry, Wildcard Losers, How They'll Fare Next Season. So I went through what I thought about the division round losers. You can read Austin Perry's article and see what he thinks about the wild card losers and how they'll do next year. That's the Kansas City Chiefs, Philadelphia Eagles, Cincinnati Bengals, and Green Bay Packers. And then one that I did on Friday, actually, and we're going to leave up to debate a little bit further. I did an article and I had a video actually as well on the NFL playoff expansion possibilities. And in the video and the article, I listed out the pros and cons of the NFL and Roger Goodell expanding the NFL playoffs to possibly 7 or 8 games. So that's a topic that I want to discuss in our fourth and long segment next week. I'm hoping also to have another guest or two on the teams that are still in the playoffs, one of the remaining four teams, a fan or writer of one of the four remaining teams, I should say. But in the meantime, please tweet at me, email me, comment on any of my articles about what you think about playoff expansion, and I'll read some of the comments or tweets or whatever on next week's show as we debate about it. So that would be really great as we next week, all of a sudden, championship game. I'm excited. That, to me, is the most exciting weekend, and that's another topic we can discuss. What is the best game or best weekend of the NFL season? Me, personally, it's this coming Sunday with the championship game. Better than Super Bowl Sunday and better than division round. I think that's the best weekend of the season. So that's all we have for today's show. Don't forget to go check that out. And FN Radio is also live on Tuesday and Thursday with Bill Enright and Todd DeFries. Listen to them 12 to 2 on those days. They will give you all the playoff roundups as well and preview the championship games on Thursday this coming week. And don't forget, our next episode will be Monday morning recapping Championship Sunday. Until then, I'm going to go try and find some peace in my mind.